Good morning. Still morning. We're doing well. Okay. I just want to start by saying, we'll start with David and Rowena have been married a number of years, very, very happily together. And David says, they wake up in the morning and David says, you know, he's a bit tired. Rowena says, you know, David, you kept me up all night with your talking. You were talking in your sleep the whole night. So David says, you know what, Rowena? If you let me say something during the day, I won't talk so much at night. This is a happy Jewish marriage. Anyway. We have had one small hiccup, and that is that our speaker, Shimona, Mrs. Stukernick, her plane has been delayed. So, we have brought in, very nicely, Rabbi Lou has agreed to step in for us. She will be coming. She'll be here hopefully by 12. So, we'll still be zeichet to hear her speak. Rabbi Lou has been here in England for 44 and a half years. He's married 46 and a half years. He has a very large family. His youngest just got engaged. I won't tell you, he has well more than a dozen children. And he has a couple married grandchildren. And he's well-versed in marriage, and he also happens to be the headmaster of the Lubavitch Girls School for 30-some years. I mean, he has spoken for us numerous times, and he certainly is someone who has spoken for us on relationships, and you'll enjoy him. So, Rabbi Lou, thank you.
Thank you very much. Wonderful to be here. This is the best things in life come unexpectedly. They just happen. That's a whole workshop itself. One of the problems, we get hung up and we get all tense about predictions that are not fulfilled. And we don't realize that sometimes what happens somehow or another might be more meaningful and might have more depth to it. I came here because of the cold weather, ultimately. That's probably why the flight was... That's to do with the whole season. I was thinking, Mrs. Overlander called me, it was near midnight last night, and said, what are you doing tomorrow morning after 10 o'clock? I couldn't say I was going to lie in because I had a little bit of a schedule, but somehow or another, I reorganized my schedule, and it's turning out better for me. I have an appointment in Hendon. I just phoned up now. By the way, it's an old Hasidic, ancient Kabbalistic custom that one of the most tried and tested methods of enhancing relationships is to turn off your mobile phone. That's exactly what I'm going to do right now. So I was thinking about 25 years ago. I had a son who was studying in Montreal. I had to go to New York to give a talk, so I went by way of Montreal. He was in the yeshiva in the dormitory, and we went for a walk. He likes the rugged outdoor weather. He's now already over 40. Then he was a boy, 16, 17. And we're walking through the streets of Montreal. It's freezing cold. And with layers upon layers, we spent about an hour and a half talking about everything in the world. And suddenly he says to me, Tati, are your feet cold? And until then I hadn't thought of it. He said, the bottoms of your feet, are they cold? I said, stop to think of it, yes. Like this, I was wrapped up in a warmth. He says, are your toes cold? I said, freezing. He said, is your big toe Is it colder than the other toe? Honestly, this happens. So I said, come to think of it, yes, it is. He said, could you explain to me why? Why should that toe be colder than all the other toes? And I had to think of something quick. But I said, I think it's because the other four toes are all together. They're warming each other up. I said, the lesson that you could be the biggest toe in town, but if you think you stand on your own, you're going to freeze. And that's what life is about. Life is about a person realizing that your greatest fulfillment is the way you relate. And in order to relate, you have to submit. And in order to submit, you have to transcend your own self. And that is the greatest way to self-fulfillment. That's what I want to speak about a little bit from different angles. And I start with the fact that today is the 24th of Teves, in the Hebrew calendar. Today is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the first Chabad Rebbe who authored the Tanya. What's the connection between Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who passed away 197 years ago, and the Tanya with Jewish marriage in the 21st century? The paradigm that our sages give of marriage is of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with God. By looking a little bit at what the Tanya says about a person's relationship with Hashem, we can understand a little bit about our relationship with each other. And by looking a little bit at our relationship with each other, we can also understand our relationship with God. The essence of the Tanya says, I'm not talking to tzaddikim. With a very high bar, a very high goal in the Tanya. But it's not talking to righteous, saintly people. It says, I'm talking to average people. But I'm showing you what you can achieve. And the first step to it is to be able to transcend your own self. You might have various desires. Don't be ashamed of them. Don't be frightened by them. Don't be depressed by them. Don't see them as failures. These are all developed through the chapters of Tanya. They are part of life, and they can become a source of creative tension. You're always in a certain inner battle, an inner tension. But the important thing is to focus on what your goal is. Your goal is to make a dwelling place for God in this physical world. And what's going on inside your heart is not necessarily something you can control or you can change. But you can change what you do. You can change what you say. You can change what you think even. And through this, you will reveal godliness within yourself. And I want to suggest that this is also a beautiful paradigm for a person in their marriage. Focus on what the goal is. Making a dwelling place for God in my home, in my life, in my persona, in my relationship. And through that, I become a more fulfilled person myself. I heard from the Rebbe once, fantastic idea. I heard this on a broadcast, must have been about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning here in England when we heard it. But it was burnt into my whole consciousness. The Rebbe said a child, a newborn child, only knows itself. And then when you get older, you learn how to relate to your mother and to others, and eventually you're able to have what modern people call personality development, until you can reach the stage of even empathizing with other people. That's the highest thing, to feel someone else's feeling. But you're still independent. I empathize with someone else, but I am still me. There reaches a stage of a person's life, for whatever reason, they transcend that total self-centeredness and they get married. They enter a relationship, a commitment with another person. That relationship is bought at the cost of submitting my independence, my self-centeredness. I have to somehow transcend. And then I can go and enter into that relationship. Now that's pretty, it's nicely articulated, it's pretty obvious thing. But then the Rebbe said something else. He said, you know what? Through transcending yourself for the sake of the relationship with another person, giving up your whole independence, you can't do anything without taking into consideration the one to whom you're committed. Through that, you become a deeper person as an individual. You as you, your own personality, becomes something which is greater than it ever could have been in any other way. And then, please God, the goal of Jewish marriage, if you look in the, Rabbi Shneur Zalman wrote the Tanya, but he also created a siddur, a prayer book, before he wrote the Tanya. He considered that as his, he wrote that he had 10 zuchusim, 10 merits in his life. And the first one was his nusach of tefillah, the order of prayer. In his prayer book, right after the Sheva Brachas, right after the marriage, comes Bris Mila. And I heard from a chosid in Moscow nearly 30 years ago, in Brezhnev days, Reb Getch Oliver Shulman, old, he was an old man, he was in the 80s, then in 1980. And he said, you know why this follows that? It's telling you, we had an underground wedding that I performed in Moscow. He said, you know why there's a marriage? So that there should be children. Now, when a couple has children, you're in a different ball game already. You can't just go where you want, when you want. When children come on the scene, it's a tremendous, tremendous sacrifice of the whole relationship with the parents. There are plenty of marriages, God forbid, which falter, God forbid, or even worse, because of that type of situation where people cannot come to terms with the fact that there's another one here, two's company and three's a crowd. But they're up. We know there are people like that. We all have that Yetzer Hara. Now I have not just my wife, my husband, whatever it is. Okay, look, I get this a lot of compensation where somehow or another we're soulmates. But you got this kid, I got to worry about this screaming baby at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I got to get up at 7 o'clock for the minion, or to go to work, or for this or for that. Or I just had a whole big event and I've got a visit here, or the different type of thing. It's a major shift in a person's lifestyle when a blessed event occurs. And yet, that is what marriage is about. It comes a stage in your life when you have to submerge once again your ego or yourself or even your partnership as a couple for the sake of doing what's right. Says the Rebbe, but really, as a result, your marriage is enhanced as well. Paradoxically, you become better as an individual couple. through the fact that you now have a focus, a goal, in a healthy marriage, there's something you're moving towards. And because of that, your whole relationship is given a dimension that it didn't have before. A common goal. Quite apart from the fact that the couple themselves, as a couple, we want to relate to each other, we want to be able to get something from each other, through giving to each other. We want to get from each other. A tremendous thing. Once you get into it, you realize I become a better individual through the fact that I submerge my ego. And now I have to give that up for a kid. And please God, for many children. They keep you young, I tell you that much. They keep you, you know. Anyway, then a person has community affairs. And the Rebbe went so on and so forth. He spoke about the Yochid and the Rabbin, the individual and the community. And he said each time, at each stage, a person becomes active, not just himself, but with an extended family, and then with the community. He said then it might be in the city. I think the mayor of New York was there, or some representative, the president. It was one of these big Fabrengens of the Rebbe. And Yitzhak. And I think it was 25 years of the Rebbe's leadership. And basically he said that at each stage, a person, by opting to do what's right, and because of doing what's right, they're giving up something of themselves. Not only have they done what's right and they're helping themselves in 180 years and Olam Haba in the next world or something. No, he said, right here and now, the very thing that you thought you're giving up becomes enhanced. You did it because it's right, or because you forced yourself. But with a groan, ugh, never, I've got to worry about someone else. Or you got this kid here, I can't have my supper on time. Or the house was not dusted as good as usual today. And there's all the different problems, that the very world-shattering problems that a person has, and you have to give them up for the sake of having a child. You suddenly realize that you become a different person. You become stronger. You become deeper. And when you give up something for the sake of doing what's right, the Rebbe once wrote, actually to the chief rabbi, when he was a boy and he first went to the Rebbe, and he said, look, I have a love of literature and art and music, worldly art, music and literature. And I can see a love for Hasidus and love for Yiddishkeit. But there are certain things which Yiddishkeit forbids. There's certain music which is forbidden, or certain art which is forbidden, a certain literature which is forbidden. So it means, is it true that I have to give up? So the Rebbe answered, basically, through discovering the spiritual dimension of life, through Yiddishkeit and through Hasidus, you get such a deep experience which more than compensates for what you had to give up. You don't have to give up. You have to pay a price. Anything you do in the world, you pay a price. But the price that you pay brings about a dimension in your own self which otherwise you would not have had. So when you speak about relationships, the first thing that we have to understand is that we have to transcend ourselves. We have to look for what we're trying to achieve with life. And it's also a developing thing. You're constantly giving up more and more. There was a beautiful talk from the Rebbe about how the land of Israel was divided up amongst the tribes. And it's used as a parable for how the Jewish people developed historically and religiously. And that in turn is a parable for relationships between people. It says in the Torah three different types of division of the land, all within two or three verses, right in the Bible, right in the Torah. It says that Hashem says, "Lorav tarbe nachalato, v'lamaat tamit nachalato." To the large tribe, give a big portion. The small tribe, give a small portion. In other words, work it out. Work out the demographics. Work out the geographics. You have a tribe which likes to graze. The tribe of Reuven had a lot of cattle. Give them grazing land. Zebulun, they were seafarers. Give them the coast. And the Asher were olive farmers. They knew how olive growers. So give them the land which is suited for that. In other words, each thing, it goes according to common sense. You work out how exactly you're going to settle, who you're going to settle there. That is the first thing that the Torah says. But the Torah also says, ach begoral, however, divide it with a goral, with lots. What does lots mean? Throwing a dart at the map. Just means flipping a coin. Let it work out some other way. And then it says, al pi Hashem, which means Ruach HaKodesh, something very, very holy, a nachala, an inheritance. What does this mean? In the development of the Jewish people, and similarly in the composition of every person's spiritual psyche, there are all of these three aspects. There was Avraham Avinu, Abraham, who Hashem tested and observed Kivayochol until he was 75 years old, and then he said, this man, this is the paradigm, this is the person for whom I created the world. I created the world that it should be a world, a fragmentation of diversity, and within it we should find the underlying unity. And this man is exactly the one that does it. He shows everyone there's this one God. He came to his recognition. He was a perfect person. And Hashem chose him. And then there was his son. And there was his grandson. And then there were the people. And they were tried. And they were tested. And they were refined in the crucible of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, that we're reading now in the Torah these days. And then God chose us. Chosenness is not the same as seeing that this person does exactly what I want. It's in a sense much deeper. Because chosenness means, even if the person does not live up to it, once you're chosen and there's a covenant and there's a bris, that Jewishness will be transmitted through this family, through this peoplehood, who will now become Jewish, and they become Am HaNivcha, they're chosen to represent to the whole human race and to the whole world what God wants from them. Whether or not we live up to it, that's what we are. Whatever the Supreme Court says. Because there's a Supreme Being above everyone. And that is the chosenness. And then there's something even deeper. Every person has a chelek eloka. God says, it's a part of me in you. You're not just chosen by me. You are me. You are me. Like when a person buys a house, why do you choose a house? You choose it because there's the right size and the right location, schools, synagogues, shops, transportation, all the different factors that might go into a person. That's why property is much more expensive, the same piece of property within a mile or two from here than a few miles away. There's a whole sense about it. So some people, they cannot be bothered with, they just say, come on, let me just find, they look at a map, almost, you know, in a figurative way. That's why I'm going to buy my house. And they buy it, and they don't bother me with it. and it'll have to be good. And they make it good. Because they chose it. They chose it, and they settle in there. And then, there's a thing that the house becomes an extension of yourself. The Talmud says, he who has no house is not a full, total human being. And now let's move over to relationships. There is an aspect of relationships which goes by logic. Whether you're choosing, you're going on the shidduch system, or you're going with internet dating of from J date or wherever it is, or any other method, or you just happen to meet somebody in the Chabad house or anywhere else. But you work out to yourself, this person fits my plan, my blueprint. This person, somehow or another, the right age range, they have just the right measure of sense of humor, and at the same time, commitment, sense of commitment, politeness, kindness, good midas, whatever it is. You work out some aspect. It's a point system. Is it a point system?
Just a funny way of. It's a funny way of.
That's how I put. I think it's the easiest. My kids. Well, yes, can I know? But we have more than one over a dozen. Yeah, three over a dozen. Anyway, but some at different stages of if we're dealing with shidduchim. They say, "Will you consider such and such kind of a person? And will you consider such and such?" This over years. This over decades. Our oldest son is 45, you know, see, not a little teenager. Now, I never answered them yes or no. I said, nothing is excluded, it's points. If it has this and this situation, it might be points for, points against. You got to work it out. That's how it works when you make decisions in life. You're always trading off. Otherwise, it would be a machine. You want to go make and adjust all the buttons, then press a button and create that person. And that person is predictable. A predictable person is called a machine. A robot. Not a human being. The imperfect person is the perfect person once you adjusted it. But how do you start? You start with some kind of... this Friday... Rabbi Tzvi Freeman, very close. We're talking, somebody wrote him a letter, he asked me a view. It was something about somebody who wanted to know, should they marry a girl with a certain serious problem. And they were referred to me. So I said, you have to know how... You have to work out to yourself how much you love this individual. How severe is the problem? What professionals have said about that problem? Whether this person listens to what the professionals prescribe for that problem? And it's part of the point system that you're working through to decide all these things together. Nobody can make that decision for you. I'll come in a minute, why not? Because if anybody else makes the decision, then you're losing point number one. Point number one, approach number one, is our peace seichel, it's called. The big tribe gets the big place, the seafarers get the coastline. In the same way, you look for somebody and you work out like any other purchase in the world. You don't get exactly, you cannot, it's a human being. That's part of their beauty. Part of their excitement is that there are things about them which get you angry and frustrated, rationally or irrationally, it doesn't make a difference. And you know that there's something else about them which is so beautiful and so complimentary and so fitting to exactly what you need. And everybody has to work this out. You know, there's a girl within our school years ago, probably a bubba by now, but she was going out with a guy. She's from a very prominent Lubavitch family. And went out with a boy who is, as it were, from even more prominent, in fact, goes back 5 generations, 10 generations, since the Alter Rebbe, now it's the 24th of Tevis. She goes out with the boy, and on the first, maybe the second, not later than the second, maybe the first date, they got to talking about what they're doing, and he said that he works, and he is planning to, that's what his plan is. He's not planning to go on Shlichus, which, not everybody in Lubavitch does. Nor do you have to do that in order to be a Lubavitch, a total loyal person. Or even to do the Rebbe's work. There are homes which are, even right here, within a mile or two from here, there are homes which are doing more than some of the Rabbanim's homes, in a sense, in drawing people through. Every home becomes a Chabad house. When the Rebbe said every home should be a Chabad house, I think he meant it should be warm, it should be open, it should be inviting, it should be doing the things, even though your external pursuit might be something which is not in the run-of-the-mill Lubavitcher. But this girl, she thought her whole life she's going to marry a shaliach, a person who is an emissary of the Rebbe, doing the Rebbe's work. So she sat down right to the Rebbe, right after that first date, the second date, and she said to the Rebbe, since I'm a little girl, I've always thought I'm going to be marrying a shaliach. And I went out with this boy, we only went out once or twice, mind you, and I find out that he's quite successful, he's building himself up, and he wants to be in business. What should I do? And the Rebbe wrote back the following words, Be'im koveya itim l'toira yehei b'shoa toivu umutzlachas. If he sets aside time to study Torah, may it be a successful marriage. Now she wasn't asking the Rebbe, should I get engaged to him? She just met him. And even the Shidduch says, if you don't get married after a while, you meet him 5 times, 10 times, sometimes more, whatever, until you work it through. And yet the Rebbe gave her a bracha for the marriage. The main reason I'm telling you the story is to what the girl did then. She told the Shatran, I'm happy to meet him again. But she didn't say that she had an answer from the Rebbe. And they met another 5, 6, or 7 times. And in her heart, she knew stage 2. She's chosen. I'm not going to outsmart the Rebbe. But she never told it to this young man. And he then decided that he wanted her. And then she told him. The chosenness is for when you find out that everything that you actually dreamed and imagined about your spouse is not 100% true. Maybe it was exaggerated. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. Maybe he's changed. What do you expect in a lifetime? Everyone changes. Some things are for the better and some things are not necessarily so. But the person has now chosen. It's mine. The most beautiful, deepest love that you could ever see in some marriages, where something unknown or unexpected and that couldn't have been known. Tragedy sometimes, or very, very great, we should never know of such things. And one sees the loyalty and commitment of the caring spouse in some cases. And in a much more miniature level, we all have that. That's what life is about. It's not, I'm not here sitting around and measuring, oh, I always thought you this, and I always relied on that, and this is how you used to do it. This type of thing. A person says, we are for each other. We are one. And then you have the second level. And the third level, which is the level of inheritance, that's already when we're not just, we are two halves of one. Not just you and my lot, and I have to deal with it. Let's say you have a child, and the child, for whatever reason, is difficult, whether intellectually or emotionally, educationally, socially, God forbid. But that's part of, to a greater or lesser extent, that's what it means to bring up children, to deal with all of their unpredictable and not and unfulfilled expectations. But it's mine. It's my obligation and it's my wealth, it's my pleasure. This is what God gave me to deal with. And then there's a deeper level where it's not just it's mine, it's me. They tell the story of Rabbi Aryeh Levin, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, a very famous man, that he once came to the doctor with his wife, and he says, "My wife's foot hurts us." He said, "Us." As if it was his foot also. I've seen that brought down in connection with the Rebbe's Sicha there about where it comes out, the idea of inheritance means that you're one with that person. So how does it express itself in practical terms? In practical terms, we have to be focused on what is our goal in life. We have to mature. We have to outgrow the infant, which is totally self-centered. By the way, that's part of being one of the things in the Tanya, he says, even if in your heart you don't become a tzaddik, you transcend your feelings and you act as you should and you speak as you should and you think as you should and you become like that in a certain sense. And the same thing applies in relationships. It also says in Chassidus, not explicitly in Tanya, but it's written in the Maimah of the Friedrich Rebbe, by Yachla, a famous Maimah. He says you can even serve God and overcome negative traits, even if it's for self-seeking. In other words, by sacrificing, by giving up, by giving in the relationship, not having to always have the last word or being dominant. By that, you become stronger, not weaker. By giving up your independence to get married, you as an independent thinker get a dimension which makes you into a person who understands life. You become a different person. And people who can't break out of that, people who cannot break out of stage one of the marriage, the calculation stage, live frustrated lives or worse. And one has to be able to get over it and say, this is where I am. And the very union, the very relationship in itself, it reinforces the depth that there is to the person beside the depth of the relationship itself. Just to take a little mite of it. Coming all my kids. We're at a bar mitzvah in Reading, Pennsylvania. Beautiful weather. And there was somehow a big house there. We had about 25-30 of our children and grandchildren. It was like a big house that had just been sold. And the man who bought it was not a Jewish man, but my son-in-law knew him. And he's not using it. Yeah, eventually he's going to develop it or build it. So he put everybody up over there. They had beds or mattresses, I don't remember. It was like a beautiful balagan over for a few days. And then there's me, and it was a beautiful Sunday after the bar mitzvah Shabbos, and I'm walking, and across the street there's this little beautiful thing, a son-in-law of mine. He sees me walking, and my wife was walking there. And he said, Shver, father-in-law, he says, what is the secret of a successful marriage for over 40 years? I, unfortunately, I forgot to bring my hearing aid. But he's pulling this across to me from across the street. I said, I'm hard of hearing. He says, Shvan, what is the secret of a happy marriage over 40 years? I said, I answered you already. In that particular case, I had heard him very well, and I had answered him. Sometimes we dwell on mishigasim. But it's not only even in business, but in marriage, it's just you. It's the hardest thing in the world. Don't answer back. I'll tell you another story, which I just heard last week. Our youngest daughter just got engaged a couple of weeks ago. Thank you very much. Please God, by all of your children and grandchildren, and enjoy all of the stages intervening. And met the chosen. He comes from his father. He lives in Crown Heights. His grandfather is a very, very well-known chassid in Kfar Chabad. He comes from Jerusalem, seven generations back. His grandfather is a chassid by the name of Tzvi Greenwald, and he's known for his as a machanech par excellence, as a educator, and as a person who promotes positive relationships, starting with young children. He gets them to write down things. I once heard him giving a talk that he said, when you're waiting for the Rebbe to come down for a farbrengi, you come, let's say, for Yom Tov, there are thousands and thousands of people, and then, if you see all these pictures or these videos, you see them like lined up against the wall, he said. And sometimes you would, in order to get a good place, you'd be sitting there or standing there for 2-3 hours. And he said, what I do is sometimes I reflect upon all those beautiful faces there and think about how each person here has aspirations and life. It's a person with a very positive view, how to look at another person and see something good in them. I'm happy that his grandson is engaged to my daughter. So last Friday night, we were in the Chabad house in Manhattan, nine days ago. I went there to speak, Upper East Side. I took him with. And at the end, at the late, Friday night, 11 o'clock, I said, tell me something from the Rebbe that you heard. He's asking me, but I said, everybody's got a gold nugget. He said his grandfather told him that he came close to Lubavitch, and he studied a lot of Hasidic teachings. And he would travel around in Israel. He's now already a man, you know, well in his 70s. But this going back 50 years ago. He would travel to the kibbutzim, the left wing, Shomer HaTzair, the Moshavim, where all these people who had come from Russia and from Poland, the old pioneers, the old chalutzim, and they were pretty secular. Like today, they're not even secular. Today they're just, they're not educated, really, Jewishly, spiritually. They're looking for something. But then they were people who came from backgrounds. And he would go, and he would speak to them about how beautiful Torah is, how beautiful Hasidus is, how beautiful Yiddishkeit is, very nice, warm, loving things. Some of the old time, the other Hasidim that were there, come from Russia and other places, they said, you let them get away with it. Tell it like it is. Tell them what they really are. That's the way to approach it. You know, you got to go in and make your point. Hit it to them. Suck it to them, like they say. So, I was talking with Mrs. Overlander before. She said, you have to watch the language. I don't know, the local. I said, I'm a pinch hitter. She said, they don't know what it means over here. In baseball, if somebody bats for somebody else, they call a pinch hitter. Anyway, probably because they hit in the pinch. Anyway, so Next time he went to New York for Yom Tov, he went into Yechidus to the Rebbe. You would write a question. He said to the Rebbe, my approach is I'm always speaking about the positive side of Yiddishkeit. And a lot of the Hasidim and Kfar Chabad told me that that's naive and wrong, and that I should be fair and loving to these people by telling them what's wrong with them. So the Rebbe read it and he immediately said, if you do that, you're going to create, he used the Hebrew word, mechitza shel bazel, you're going to create an iron curtain between you and them. That's all you'll achieve. You're going to separate between you and them. He says, they know what they are. And if you're coming there to remind them what they are, you've lost. You're coming there to show them something positive, something good. Where does that fit in with the relationship? Sometimes you have to be hard of hearing. Sometimes you don't have to go and mention. You don't even have to mention it the next day when things have settled down. You don't have to mention it, certainly not 2 months later. Remember the time you didn't put the cover on the toothpaste and it all got squeezed out and this happened and no. It's not necessary. Even much worse things. Usually, the person who does it, you didn't choose them for nothing. They're a beautiful person. And sometimes they lose it. The best way to deal with it is sometimes to say, we are one, and to promote the positive side of things. That is how relationships work. Relationships work by understanding there's a point system. In other words, there's not a perfection in anybody. Working towards, when you're choosing your partner, then for whatever reason, that is your partner, for however it came about. Whether you are mistaken or situations change, they are your chosen. Commitment. Nase v'nishma. That's how the paradigm of our relationship with God is based on doing what's right. That's what Tanya is all about. A lifestyle. A commitment. A focus on what I am about. I am here to make a dwelling place for God in the world. I'm here to make a dwelling place for God in this home. A dwelling place for God in our marriage. How does it happen? It happens through a person saying, it's holy. The marriage is holy. You don't see it. Dig a little deeper. And I'll conclude with a verse from a Medrash. It says that there were three major figures in Jewish history who met their wives, who met their spouses at a well, or near a well. Yitzchak Avinu, when he met Rivka, it says, from the well of Lachai Roi. Yaakov met Rachel at the well, and Moshe, it's a medrash on yesterday's Sedra. Moshe met Zipporah at the well when she was being shunned by the shepherds and he had to fight for her. The question is, why did they meet at the well? You can't explain it. Water is a very romantic thing, but usually you think of water, the beautiful, nice lake, or flowing stream, the flowing of life. It's very romantic and interesting. That's what you call water. But a well, what's a well? It says a well is a very interesting thing. A well is actually a composite of two opposites. On the one hand, a well, you get the water, the wellspring, the fresh water, but you have to dig. You have to remove whatever is there. And it's not easy to dig. On the other hand, as the Rebbe explains, a well, you didn't create the water. You had to go and work very hard, but it's only to uncover that which was there all along. And that is what marriage is about. That is what relationships are about. It's there. It says in the Zohar that the people who are meant for each other, they're each a half of a neshama. That souls were really split at some stage of history, and now, when they got married, they were reunited. It's real. The water is on the ground. Then you have to work, and sometimes it doesn't appear so immediately. We learn from Yitzchak had to work very hard, had to send the whole idea of finding his partner. And Yaakov worked very hard. It's written in the Torah. And Moshe had to fight and struggle with the shepherds in order to save the power. You have to work. But at the end of the day, the approach of it is there's living waters under it. I wish everybody here should have good relationships, moving relationships. Start with your own relationship with yourself. People who cannot get along with somebody else, 99.999, cannot get along with themselves. It's a reflection of the inner tensions that we all have. We all have a man and a woman in us, and we all have various aspects. We're trying to reconcile and be happy with ourselves and be happy with all of the hand that we dealt us, or with our past, or with our family, or with our neighbors. This is part of what life is about. And a little bit of peace in ourselves. We're realizing, as it says in the Tanya, that all of this is there in order to make you into a more whole person through that struggle. Look in chapter 27 of Tanya, for example. Just one example. 27:28. And to bring out the deeper part of yourself, in the same way, when we work to dig in that well, we're bringing out a deeper part of us, of our spouse, a partner, and also simultaneously a deeper part of ourselves. Through that, we'll bring Mashiach. Sure, but I'm hard of hearing.
When you pose a question, you must pose it loudly. Oh, can I just make an announcement before we... We're still waiting for the speaker to come out, and because of that, we're actually bringing lunch from the White House for everyone to eat, so you don't have to go anywhere. Lunch is coming, and I mean our planned speaker, Rabbi Lou, is kindly... Thank you very much, Rabbi Lou. That was... beautiful, as always. Thank you.
I succeeded as a pinch hitter.
You are amazing. Amazingly so. Can I start with a question?
Sure.
I had a woman recently call me and say, you know, she has six children, and she said, you know, and we've been, you know, and now they're growing up, and the youngest is already in school, and what about me? Those were her words. What about me? So that is all about her, if you know what I mean. So I'm not quite sure how to answer someone who asked me a question. What about me?
Very good question. Remind me of a lady who wants to ask me. She said, "Do you have any children?" I said, "Yes." She said, "How many?" I said, 11 at that time, whatever it was. She says, "Look, I've got me, a very prominent, well-known family, by the way, became later on. I have me, and my husband, and my two children, and I don't know I don't know how to divide myself amongst all of us. And how do you do it with 11 kids?" I said, "We don't divide, we multiply." that was just a little battle. But the point is, The point is that we have to see that. That's why I say it begins off with the paradigm. What am I about?
Sorry, what was the point of the question again?
I shall repeat the question. The question was that a woman came to Mrs. Rebbetzin Overlander and said she has six children, and now the youngest one is already in school, and she's suddenly looking at herself and asking, "What about me? I've achieved for my husband, I've achieved for my six children. What about me?" By the way, I want you to know that in the last 30, 40 years that I'm dealing with these questions of relationships and marriages and people, and you know, not professionally, I'm a headmaster in a school, but I deal with this very, very much, and everything really is interconnected in a sense. But I've noticed that that is, has been the source of a lot of heartache of families, and ultimately the individual who thinks, now I'm worrying about me, and they run off to just today there's so many different avenues of running away from the reality, and it all starts from the question, what about me? And what I would say after your question, that what I said right at the beginning, that you have to work on your goal and where you're leading to, and when you're transcending yourself, that is the me. When the Rebbe answered that by what you give up, you get a deeper dimension, means you, the me, gets a deeper dimension that it wouldn't have had otherwise. A person has to see, we're living in a Western society where the great heroes, the hero is the self-made person. The hero is the person who is independent, who's rugged, who gets what they want. And the person has a family, because that's part of your completeness. They need, you know, they need a family. That's a trophy wife, trophy kids, a trophy husband, whatever it happens to be. That's what they have. The Torah says, this is you. You also have to make a living. You could be very successful. Win the game of Monopoly. Do what you want. But what expresses you, that is what the you is. Now, I mean, that we have to say it in a very loving and makarev way to that woman, let's say, and to ourselves, and to find it without having to feel that I'm a failure. We have, can I know her, 15 children. The 14th just got engaged. Right? Now, I know, but we only have a couple of granddaughters engaged, and one is married, you know, and Beitz Hashem, Hashem said, help, we should be able to find a good partner for our youngest as well. And then we start working on the grandchildren. And all along, I try to work for other people. That's my fulfillment. My fulfillment is to see another person. I'm sitting with my wife and my daughter, just going to get Friday night. Nobody came. Just sitting alone late on Friday, after the meal, after everything. And I said, let's think if we can get 20 names of people whom maybe we can help. And we got about 25, 30. And then my daughter says, only England? I said, whatever you want, but let's start with England. We have from England itself about 25 names. Let's see how we can introduce them to somebody good. A person should see, that woman should give input to her children. Her youngest child is presumably 5 or 6 years old. That child needs a mother. And that mother needs a child. And if God forbid she would say she's childless, I would say fulfill yourself through somebody else's children. Someone once asked me, it's a little bit of a chutzpah, the question is asked, what do you think the Rebbe felt like having no physical children of his own? Asked me how the Rebbe feels. I said the Rebbe is a Rebbe. Okay, a completely higher type of a person. Very difficult question. I said, and if you look through his writings, there are tens of thousands of pages, maybe hundreds of thousands, and you can fit in when he spoke about himself, it was always like connected to something else, you could probably fit it into less than one side, half of a side of a page. About his feelings. Other than his feelings of love and of what he has to do, but not about feeling for himself. I said, however, since you ask it, I'm trying to think of from the Rebbe's actions, what maybe he thought, or maybe what I think he would want me to thought, or so a person who let's say was childless, or alone, single. The Rebbe, what he did was he adopted. He adopted 15 million Jews and 6 billion humans. Not just he felt for them, or he cried for them, or he davened for them. I'm sure he did all that as well. But actively working and giving of himself for that person, that's the me. That's what makes you into a great person. That's what makes you into a Rebbe. So I would give that woman guidance in how to, first of all, guide her family, and even when they're married, the children should feel, you see, what happens is, a woman once said to me, she had a problem with her son. He was studying in Eton College, one of these fancy English schools. But it was the summer, and this is the word she told me on the phone. This is 35 years ago. Son is a prominent barrister, by the way, today, but she said he's a failure, he's a nothing. She says, it comes the summer, all my friends and family get rid of their kids for the summer. And I said, how do you use a word like get rid of? How do you say a word like get rid of your kids? Where does it come from? Because the person feels that they're sacrificing, but it's not to make themselves into a more fulfilled person. This woman should see those children as hers. It has to be age appropriate, and when they're married, you're not in control anymore, but you're there as an advisory capacity. You're there for them. You show them love. You show them concern. You can sometimes make up for some of the mistakes you might have made years before and decades before. The important thing is that a person should feel that in my relationships, it's not me giving. Sure, it's giving. That's the price I'm paying, and that's the pennies, no matter how difficult it is. Those are the pennies I'm paying to buy the crown jewel, which is the relationship, or the family, or the community. Whichever it is, it's not I'm giving. It's I'm receiving. I'm also giving. That's the way you receive. Yes.
In every relationship, you mentioned earlier on about focusing on what your goals are, and you shouldn't be, you should be said, depressed by your desires or whatever. And all the time a person can change, and his horizons can change. And in order to make decisions about what he should do in the relationship, if he wants to speak up, if he wants to keep quiet, how do you know what's the best path to take in saying something to your spouse? In saying something, in advising or, you know, criticizing. When should you say, you know, there's too much salt in the soup, or, you know, I love the children, or whatever. How do you know where to pitch it in terms of maintaining the shalom bias?
Just repeat the question for those who... I don't hear because I just don't hear, except when you don't want me to hear. And here, maybe because he's facing front, correct me if I paraphrase your question. Since we spoke about not letting yourself get depressed or disappointed, or when you're disappointed when people have changed, they're not exactly the ideal that you thought they were on your wedding day, and somehow or another you find that there are other aspects perhaps that you didn't know or that have developed or that time or energy has caused to happen. And you want sometimes to discuss it or to let your feelings be known to your spouse. But at the same time, how do you draw the line between discussing it and just letting it be? Right?
Good, yeah. You paraphrased it very well.
Thank you.
Even better than I asked it.
I don't know. No, the answer is, it's also, in a sense, it's a point system. It depends on many, many factors. The Rebbe once told Rabbi Mendel Futterfass, one of the greatest Hasidim of the generation, maybe the greatest Hasid of this latter half of the 20th century. It's arguably so. He lived in London, by the way, for a few years. And then he went to Israel, to Kfar Chabad, which is a very, very complex village. And he was given a job of being the mashpia, the Hasidic mentor, in the yeshiva and in the town. And there were so many different factions and needs and things that within that beautiful kfar. And he asked the Rebbe for a device. And the Rebbe gave him a one-line advice. And I heard him speaking once for half an hour explaining that one line. But the one line was, the Rebbe said, you have to say what has to be said. He says, say the word. It means give it to them. Vemin mindaf, ven mindaf, un vu mindaf. That means, it's Yiddish, it means to whom it should be said, at the time when it should be said, and at the right place. And he said that some of the biggest problems in relationships come from people saying something to the wrong person, and sometimes they say it to the right person, but at a very inappropriate time or occasion, or in the wrong place, not comfortable at certain times. They work on it. What I mean is that sometimes the only person I can really definitely change is me, and I have to change me in a way that's most likely, at least partially, to have an effect on somebody else. So the answer to the question is, I'll add a fourth thing, which is how to say it. Sometimes the way to say it is by changing one's own behavior. It brings out something that the other person should be desperate to make this person want to feel comfortable. From the stage of letting off the steam, which we normally do to those nearest and dearest, that's natural. Understand it. That's why you have to be hard of hearing. You have to understand that that's why they're saying it. But to understand that sometimes from the criticism that the person gives, or the negative behavior, the uncomfortable behavior that they show, until being desperate to make me happy, there's a road that's part of the excitement of life. But it happens. Doesn't take decades. Doesn't even take years. But it could take months or weeks of consistent adjusting our own behavior to bring about. In other words, it's a constant courtship, in a sense. You're careful when you're going out with a girl. You're careful about every word and every question. What do they mean? What did that person tell them? Who's going to find out? What's that? All this type of thing happens in the Shidduch system and any other system. And really, in our whole life, we are working at maintaining and deepening the relationship. We have to graduate. We have to mature from level 1 to level 2. The definition of your relationship at this stage is guiding and helping, which you do, Baruch Hashem. Family, I happen to know. Guiding and elevating your children. And being there for them, even when the curveballs come, or when they do things, or things happen to them which, you know, you would never have, you don't know how you're going to cope with it. And yet, finding a way to be able to deal with that, and since that is your goal and your wife's goal, it's your goal as a unit, as a one, not as two ones that are tied together, as two halves that are one. That is our relationship, and that makes our marriage better, and that makes me, as worrying about what about me, also better. That's not something which is outside of the me. The people who are totally into me, and many people don't get married because of that. They cannot transcend their immediate needs. Might be real needs, but somehow they've never shown themselves how to transcend that. They are not the people that usually, they're much lesser proportion of people that you come to help you in a problem. You think they're the observers. They don't have all the frustrations of having to fine-tune a relationship for a whole lifetime, for many decades, with your spouse. And what the Chachamim called Tzar Gidol Bonim, an inevitable thing, the frustrations that that come as a result of raising children, they don't have that. So they must be very relaxed and observers of the scene, and they're always, very often, giving you advice to everybody else. But some people don't run to them for the advice. Why not?
They don't have experience.
But they, as individuals, they're perfect. They'd be the best doctors. Because when you do it, and you, and in order to have a successful relationship, you have to transcend the self. You have to give of the self. But paradoxically, the self itself becomes much stronger. You become a different person. So it's not what about me. That is the me.